got a real treat for the bubble this week. Something I've been looking forward to for a couple weeks since we thought of the idea. Yeah. He's Montana Samuels. I'm Mike Bonner. This is The Bubble, and we're going to have Jared Diamond on of the Wall Street Journal to talk some baseball. And few people enjoy the game more than Jared. Definitely a must-follow on Twitter. But he's going to come on, and we're going to talk about the state of baseball. Talk about pace of play, talk about the quality of play, maybe some changes that could be possibly happening. What could make baseball better? Does it need to be better?
Is baseball dying?
Is baseball finally dying? Did you say finally?
Is baseball finally dying?
Oh, in terms of not like rooting for it to die.
No. Is it I'm definitely not rooting for it to die.
So Jared's a great guy. He's kind of a little bit of a character. So without further ado, I'll bring Jared Diamond on. Well, as promised, we have Jared Diamond here from the Wall Street Journal. Jared, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's so great to talk to you.
Oh,
it's been a long time.
It has been a long time, which is why I'm excited. I think the last time we were in person. No, that wasn't last. I'm thinking when we were in Newport covering the Big East Media Day in Newport, Rhode Island. But that was way back. We've hung out many times after that. But today we're talking
about. That was so long ago. Syracuse was still in the Big East when we covered that.
And one of Jared's favorite stories from that was I had to write a receipt to cross the bridge, the Newport Bridge, because they didn't take Fastlane. I didn't have any cash or Easy Pass now.
That was rough. You could have been thrown in jail for that.
Yes, that was Jared's big. He was nervous that I was going to get thrown in jail for not paying my. I paid double on the way back, but we're not talking about tolls. We're not talking about taxes. We're talking about baseball today on the pod, and specifically the state of baseball. And you wrote about last year how the data revolution actually is brought on a new era of baseball in terms of really how it slowed the game down. And you wrote that a year ago, and we'll link that story in our description. But a year later, how have you seen, if anything, change since then?
Well, the pace or time of game has actually improved this year a little bit. Still not to where it needs to be. It's gone down from last year. This year, the average nine-inning game is 2 hours, 59 minutes. Last year was 3 hours, 5 minutes. So I guess we could say that's an improvement. I still think that's longer than Major League Baseball would like, but clearly the sport is trying to take steps to try to speed up both the time and the pace of the game. You know, and I think we're going to see more of it. The commissioner, Rob Manfred, really wants to implement more rules, more restrictions, more things to speed up the game. That so far the players have resisted. They weren't able to come to a deal with the Players Association. But it's something Rob Manfred wants. Now, whether it's a good decision or not, you know, it's a tough question. It is. So baseball is sort of trending direction because the game is getting smarter. The game is clearly smarter today than it's ever been before in its history. The problem is being smarter doesn't necessarily mean it's more sort of entertaining or aesthetically pleasing for fans. You know, and I think that's the biggest issue that baseball is facing, is trying to balance sort of, we want our teams to be smart, and we want intelligent sort of smart thinking to be rewarded. But at the same time, we have to make sure it's a product that people actually want to watch.
What are some of the changes that have been proposed to speed up the game? And what's the biggest change, whether it's even if it's a 5%, 2% chance that you see most likely happening?
Rob Manfred wants an actual pitch clock. He wants a clock right up there for everyone to see, like a shot clock in basketball. The players don't. I do think it's going to happen eventually, maybe as soon as going in the next year. It's already been implemented in the minor leagues for quite a while now, or at least the last few years, and it's worked for the most part. And you're getting to the point now where most, you know, majority of players who are in the major leagues had experience the pitch clock in the minor leagues. So for them, it's sort of old hat. So I would expect to see that come soon. And the bigger question to me is whether there's going to be more dramatic changes that alter sort of how the game is played fundamentally. For instance, changes to how pitchers are used, right now relief pitchers have to face one bat. Could that be raised where you have to face two or three other sort of restrictions on mid-inning pitching changes? Because really that is among the biggest reasons why the games are getting longer and slower. It's just the bullpen usage. It's changing. The relief pitchers are coming in a lot more frequently. Can that be limited? Should it be limited? That's what Rob Manfred is sort of trying to work through.
What do you think? You spoke a little bit to the pushback that the players are giving to the new initiatives for rule changes. What do you think is the biggest sticking point? I think Mike and I were talking before we started recording. We were sort of wondering how the traditionalism of baseball, like sort of baseball for the sake of the game, can it survive in a world where now the commissioner is starting to worry about, is this product going to bring more fans to the game?
Baseball players are stubborn. They don't like change at all. They like their routine. They don't like being told that sort of the way you've gone and you've done your job for X amount of years is, can no longer be the way you do your job. But I think even more than that, right now at least, I think part of what's going on is that the players are angry. And I don't think this is what they're angry about. They're angry because it looks like they did a, you know, they kind of got in trouble in the last collective bargaining agreement. We saw what happened in free agency this past year, where veterans weren't being signed. And there was a real issue there with sort of the financials of baseball. And I think the players as a union are sort of hunkering down. They're kind of retreating and saying, we're upset, we're mad, and we're not going to give an inch on anything. So because they're not getting paid in free agency, they're saying, well, we're not going to help you, the league, and sort of your initiative that we don't even really love anyway. So I do think that's a factor. So things were sort of looking last offseason like maybe we'd see some more aggressive rule changes for 2018. Then the offseason happened. Then things were starting to look really bad with free agency. And when it became time for the league and the union to get together, the union basically said, get lost. And frankly, from a negotiating standpoint, I can't really blame them, just given where things are. You know, labor relations in baseball are sort of in a very, very precarious moment. The relation between the league and the union is probably as bad as it's been since the strike of 94-95. And I think that plays a role in sort of everything that's going on. You know, it sounds really simple, but money sort of drives everything. And it's money that's driving Rob Manfred to want to change the rules. And sort of in a different way, it's money, I think, that's driving the players to sort of want to push back against the league.
That brings me to my next question. You wrote a story in June about baseball attendance dropping 6.6%, which to me seems it would concern both players and ownership, because if people aren't attending games, then nobody's going to get paid, or at least at the levels that they had been getting paid. Does that number, obviously owners are worried about it, did the players pay attention to any of that number, and what kind of effect could this have on teams in the future?
I would say it's a concern. I wouldn't say it's a panic yet. So since I wrote that story, as expected, the number has changed. I don't know exactly what it is, but attendance has improved over the summer, sort of as you would expect. It's still going to be a much bigger drop than you typically would see in the past, but it has stabilized somewhat. And just given sort of the nature of the intense pennant races this September, I think you could see September attendance be okay as well. So we'll see how that plays out. But generally speaking, yeah, it's a concern because you don't want to see empty ballparks. It's less of a concern though, because in reality, the gate is no longer the big money maker for baseball. It's just not. It's these TV deals. Now, you could say, sort of look in a crystal ball in the future and you say, well, people aren't coming to the game. At some point, does that mean they're not watching games as much? And does that affect future TV contracts? Yes. I think the answer to that is yes, which means that the attendance issue is sort of one that needs to be looked at. And I think that's what MLB is on it. I think they're acknowledging that something is happening, that this is not just a coincidence. This is not just because of weather or what have you. And then the question for them becomes, okay, is this because people are just staying home to watch games on TV because the TV experience is so great? Or is this because of a lack of interest in baseball? Is this because things are too expensive? You hear that a lot. Mm-hmm. Tickets are too expensive, or concessions are too expensive. So what is the root of it? And that is a huge question, because if it's just the tickets are too expensive, or is that people are just preferring to watch games on TV, that's less concerning than the alternative, sure, which is people are just tuned out.
Yeah. And I think when you talk about the length of games, or even just the way games are being played, I want to kind of go into the strikeout, walks, home run conversation. I remember in the early 2000s, even mid-2000s, you had the grind out, draw walks, get on base. The Red Sox, Yankees would play five-hour games. And then I felt like the Royals won with this athletic, put the ball in play type of game. And then I felt like, okay, baseball's a copycat game. We're going to get into this athletic type of game. And then it just kind of almost disappeared. There are some athletes, but it's back to that get on base, hit a home run. What do you think happened? Or am I remembering things wrong? What happened after that Royals thing where we're back to where we were in the beginning?
I think really what it is that the Royals are viewed as a real anomaly.
Okay.
They're not viewed as something that can be copied or should be copied. I don't want to say that people think the Royals were luck, but yeah, I think there's a little bit that people think the Royals kind of got lucky. They kind of stumbled into this sort of killer bullpen and used it well, and they ended up winning the World Series, and good for them. Look, they deserve to win that World Series. Those
sure.
are great teams. I covered the Royals in 2015. Incredible. Really an amazing, amazing series. They were fantastic. But I don't think that people viewed their lineup construction as necessarily an ideal one. And look, the reality is they didn't win because of their lineup. Yes, they did put the ball in play. Yes, they didn't strike out a lot. Yes, they didn't hit a lot of home runs. They also didn't score a lot of runs. The reality is they weren't very good offensive teams. The same goes, by the way, for the Giants when they won their World Series, another team that people point to. Well, look, you could do it this other way.
Yeah,
you can. But why did the Giants win the World Series? They had great, great pitching. They didn't win because they're hitting. So I don't necessarily think that the lessons people took from the Royals was, well, it's a contact-driven lineup. I think the lessons people took from the Royals was, oh my God, we need a bullpen like they had. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's sort of in the eyes of people around the game why the Royals sort of were that good.
Well, and we see that continuing the theme of talking about the Royals, we sort of see them following the trend that the Astros set, where you're really bad for like 3 or 4 years, almost by design. And then it's almost like a tanking strategy. And now the Royals are one of the teams that are almost guaranteed at this point to lose 100 games. Have you seen like the trend of tanking in baseball? When do you think that started? Was it with the Astros back in that 4 year stretch? And then two, how has that sort of affected how people are interacting with those teams, whether that continues to help with fan attendance or fans just even watching the games?
Yeah, I think the lack of competitive, and I'm answering the second part of your question first. I think the lack of competitiveness around the league, or just the overall competitive landscape, is one of the biggest reasons for sort of the overall interest in baseball. I think you're seeing in a lot of markets that when the team says we're not going to compete for the next 2 or 3 years or 4 or 5 years, the fans are increasingly saying, okay, well then we'll see you in 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Right.
And by the way, good for the fans. That's what fans should be doing. This idea of blowing up your team should not, to me, should not be tolerated. I think I really think it's terrible across all sports. That doesn't mean I think it's dumb, by the way. It's not dumb. It clearly worked. Mm-hmm. The Astros showed it worked. The Philadelphia 76ers, the NBA, shows that it works. But this kind of goes back to our beginning conversation, which is, does it really matter if it works if people don't like it? Mm-hmm. What is this really about? This is really for the fans. The fans are the ones that sort of make sure that baseball continues. And I do think it's bad where there's so many teams that are just so clearly so far away from ever competing. I mean, it's embarrassing when you look at the standings right now and you see an Orioles team that's 38-94. That is impossibly, impossibly bad. Look how many teams right now have winning percentages under 400. The Orioles, the White Sox, the Royals, the Marlins are sort of right there. They're at 402, and the Padres. That's the possibility of five teams with winning percentages under 400, it's bad. It's bad for the game, and it's something that I wonder if something's going to need a change or at an institutional level to take care of. The Astros showed it can work. The Cubs also, I think you have to talk about. Mm-hmm. The Cubs as well, having a lot of success with this model once the AL East team got there. But I think there's a couple points that I feel is important to sort of point out about those teams, the teams that had it work for. The Cubs, let's start with the Cubs. They did tank. Don't get me wrong. They did. They got Chris Bryant. They got Kyle Schwarber. A lot of talent came as a result of their tanking. But what did they do once they sort of were close to contending? They went out and they spent an unbelievable amount of money on free agency. They signed Jason Hayward for like $8 billion. They signed John Lester. Most teams that tanked, like the Cincinnati Reds or the White Sox, they are not going to spend $500 million on free agency to sort of get them over the hump. There is no chance that the White Sox are going to spend that amount of money on free agency. The Cubs would not have won the World Series. They didn't spend that money on. Ben Zobrist is another one. Mm-hmm. Then you look at the Astros. The Astros are also sort of another interesting situation. They had the number one overall pick 3 years in a row. They tanked harder than any team has ever tanked before. One of those number one picks was Carlos Correa, an enormous, enormous success, one of the best players in the major leagues. The next year, they picked Mark Appel with the first overall pick. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know who Mark Appel is, it's because he never played in the major league, yeah. And he's retired from baseball now. He was truly one of the biggest busts in the history of the draft. With the next number one pick, they took Brady Aiken, another player who is out of baseball now. Now, the Brady Aiken situation is a little bit different. They ended up getting, as a result of Aiken not signing with the Astros, they ended up getting the number two pick the next year, and they did draft Alex Bregman with that pick, who's ended up being really good. So that's a little murky. But the point I'm making is having the number one pick in baseball is not a guarantee. It's just not. Mm-hmm. You know, the Astros, and again, that front office has done a great job. They've had a lot of success. They won the World Series. They also got pretty lucky. Jeff Luhnow, the architect of the tanking Astros, he inherited a team that had George Springer in the organization, who won the World Series MVP. It had Jose Altuve in the organization, who won the actual American League MVP last year. And it had Dallas Keuchel in the organization, mm-hmm. who, by the way, the Astros tried to trade many times before he became a Cy Young winner. So to say that, like, oh, he rebuilt this organization from nothing, not totally true when you have a Cy Young winner, the AL MVP, and the World Series MVP sort of already there. So the point I'm making is I don't think tanking is sort of this foolproof strategy. Mm-hmm. You need some luck. You need some skills. And I would prefer not to just be part of the lexicon to the way it is.
I wanted to ask you, too, about strikeouts. I think a couple of studies have shown that strikeouts, walks, and home runs account for about one-third of the action in baseball, or the plate results in baseball, which is a high number. Strikeouts specifically, do you see the high number of strikeouts as a result of bullpens and pitchers and that specification, or is it also is it more on the hitters for that upswing and all or nothing type of mentality?
To me, and a lot of people would say it's the hitters. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's sort of the standard line you hear. Mm-hmm. I disagree with it 1,000,000%. To me, the reason for the offensive landscape in baseball is almost exclusively because of the quality of the pitching. The pitching in baseball right now is actually unfair. It is truly unfair to hitters. Everyone throws like 100 miles an mm-hmm. hour with nasty breaking stuff. You see it online every day. You're watching games. Who could possibly hit some of these pitchers that you see? Add in the fact that you never, ever face a tired pitcher anymore. Ever.
Yeah.
Every relief pitcher is throwing 100 or 98 with sliders that go like 90 that dive out of the strike zone. That's hard. It's really hard. So how are batters responding? They're saying, well, there is no chance that we're going to be able to string together four hits in an inning or three, four hits in an inning to score the quote-unquote old-fashioned way. The only chance we have to score runs against this quality of pitching is hope to do it in one swing. And that has sort of led the hitters that we better hit more home runs. But to me, the pitching has sort of led to that. And this is not new in baseball. Throughout baseball history, pitching is always ahead of hitters. We know that. But there's been times throughout baseball history where the pitching has gotten too far ahead of hitters, where that gap, where that race, which pitching has always led, became a rout. And this happened in 1968 when the mound was changed in 1969 to favor hitters. And I'm wondering if we're reaching the point now where Major League Baseball has to say, you know what, the pitching is too far ahead of the hitters, and we have to do something to sort of give the hitters more of a chance. Because right now, I am not surprised to see all the strikeouts when I watch the quality sort of the pitching. And look, I do think there may be a time where we realize that there is value, like you said, and let's just put the ball in play more and let's make that a focus. And maybe we get to that point and it fixes it a little bit, but I don't think you solve the larger issue that way without doing something just about the quality of the pitching, because 100 miles an hour is really hard to hit. Mm-hmm.
I think you make a great point. I think that makes a lot of sense, but is baseball ready for a revolutionary change of lowering the mound or something like that, because we're talking about pitch clock and we can't get that. I covered that in the SEC. You don't even notice that the college baseball, that there is a pitch clock. It's just kind of, so that seems like something that isn't anything. It does seem like something may need to happen. Do you see something that big happening in baseball relatively soon?
I think it's possible. I mean, I actually agree with what you just said, which is, all these rule changes, people make a huge stink, they freak out, they scream, they yell. Guess what? In 5 minutes, everyone forgot about it and move on. Look at what happened this past winter, right, with the mound visit. We're going to have more mound visits. No more mound visits. That was a three-day story with people yelling and saying, this is going to ruin baseball. And I swear I've not heard anyone talk about it once all season long because it's had, like, no effect. And I believe that for just about any rule change, same thing would happen, where it'd be a huge fight. And then 2 weeks into the season, it's like, okay, let's move on. It's fine. That's what I think.
Do you see now chatting with you, chatted with a lot of our friends from college who cover baseball, and it seems like the younger generation, whether it's writing or watching the game, they want to see, you know, a Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens in the Hall of Fame. They want to see the game sped up. Do you see the younger generation, whether they're in Little League now or you and I who are watching games now, do you see a different era being introduced into the game maybe in 10 or 15 years because that younger generation just looks at it differently than from when, you know, Roberto Clemente was playing or, you know, Ted Williams or that type of look at the game?
Yeah, it's hard to say. The reality is you hear the people that I hear from are baseball fans, hardcore baseball fans. They're kind of people that love the game and they're people that then sort of don't like change. I think baseball is more concerned about maybe more casual fans that aren't tweeting at me all day and night. But that said, one thing you mentioned was the Hall of Fame situation. And yeah, there's no doubt that the younger generation wants to see sort of are more lenient toward PED users. There's no doubt about that. I think that's partially because we just grew up with those guys, right? To me, Barry Bonds is the best player I ever saw, and you're telling me he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. Really took PEDs. Well, when we were growing up, you know, me and you, PEDs were just like the game. It wasn't a thing because it was just normal. It didn't seem weird. I remember when I first heard about steroids with Mark McGwire in 1998. It didn't really occur to me when I was 10 years old that it was like a big deal. Like, I knew it was like wrong and against the rules, but it was like, yeah, I mean, there's this thing that makes it more home runs and the players are taking it. It was just sort of the way of life. For us, it didn't really seem like a scandal the way it seemed, I think, for older baseball fans. So for us, it's a no-brainer. For many younger people, it's a no-brainer that those guys should be in the Hall of Fame. I don't know if it'll happen, unfortunately. Or I don't want to say unfortunately. I would prefer to see it. I don't know if it's going to happen. I just don't think there's enough time for those guys on the ballot. we'll see.
But on that note, if you introduce these things at the college level, like a pitch clock or something like that, or in the minors, when they eventually get to the league, and you mentioned this a little bit, it shouldn't be a change. Just like, not that PEDs are legal now or anything like that, but at the same time, a pitch clock is entirely different where, oh yeah, I've played with that since Little League. It's not anything to me.
It's already like that.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Most minor leaguers had a pitch clock.
Yeah.
They have.
And if they're in the college, they dealt with it too.
Yeah, and even big leaguers, when they go down for a rehab assignment for the minor leagues, they have it. It's just because you're a major leaguer, when you go down to double A for a rehab assignment, you still have to deal with it. You know, you don't get special back kind of special treatment. So, right. Yes, I think there's going to be a time where it's just sort of all going to be normal. And for our children or whatever, it won't be a big deal because it'll just be sort of what they've always known.
So we've talked about pace of play, we've talked about style of play, and we've also talked about the quality of play in modern baseball. And if we're operating under the premise that interest in the sport is dwindling, and these are three pretty large factors that go into that, which of those three do you think needs to see change happen quickest to sort of right the ship, or if the ship is even in that dire of state?
Is the ship in that dire of a state?
I think that's the question, yeah.
Actually, Montana played college baseball, so he's he still played it. So he's probably a little bit more negative in that sense of the dire straits of baseball. I think it's all in the eye of the perspective, and I guess we're curious of your perspective.
What drives me nuts about baseball in general is just how much time people talk about why baseball is terrible. Is there any other sport where every single announcer, ex-player, analyst spends half their time on every broadcast telling you why the game stinks now and was better before? I swear I do not hear this in other sports, and it drives me crazy.
Well, I think the players of the 90s and the basketball say that it's easy now, and then football now, specifically this year with the cornerback, the tackling rule.
Helmet.
You definitely hear, the game was more physical.
Right.
But the players are softer now. Fine, I get it. But with baseball, it's people arguing that fundamentally that baseball is terrible now, and they're the ones.
Right.
They're on TV. They're supposed to sort of be helping grow the game, not telling you why it's awful. And I'm not saying that everything in baseball is great. There are definitely some things about baseball that are worse than they were in the past. But there's also some things about it that are better than they've ever been. The quality of the athlete, the skill on the field. There's some amazing parts about baseball now. And I do wish that we, as sort of a baseball fan community, and highlighted those things a little bit more. And like, I'm a reporter. I write the negative parts about baseball too. I'm not here to say that. Mm-hmm. I'm here to like carry water for baseball. It has problems, don't get me wrong. But it's not falling apart. You know, baseball has been dying, quote unquote, for literally since like the beginning
years.
Of baseball.
Right.
You could find articles from, no joke, the 1800s in newspapers that said that baseball is going to die for this reason and the other. It's not going anywhere. It's just changing. It's always changed. The other thing that I think we forget that fans of baseball don't want to acknowledge that, baseball was the same and now it's different. No, baseball has not been the same for all these years. Baseball has changed throughout its history. It has not been the same at all. And to say that, I love baseball because it stays the same, it's just disingenuous. It doesn't stay the same. It's always changing. It's always evolving. Sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. But it's always changing and hopefully eventually getting better.
Cool. I think that's a perfect way to end it. Yeah, right there. Jared, again, thank you so much for having you on. I think we kept you a little longer than we thought, but it was great insight, great conversation. We'll hopefully have you back on soon.
Sounds good. Just because I just talk too much.
No.
I just can't shut me up.
You love baseball. That's what I said. Imagine if we were talking about something you actually enjoyed. Like we could get into a Disney podcast if you wanted.
I have done those before, and that is quite a trip, let me tell you.
Thanks again, Jared. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
One aspect when you think about baseball, when Jared was talking about the great things about baseball and how it continues to change, an aspect about baseball that hasn't changed is it's a game for almost everybody. When I say that, everybody knows three strikes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost become synonymous with, you know, governing, or, you know, when you're, oh, three strikes and you're out, you know, or, you know, right. You have three strikes. Everyone understands what a walk is. Everyone knows what a home run, oh, that's a home run of an idea, or, you know, you really hit it out of the park on that one.
Right.
So everyone can go to a baseball game and enjoy it. Football isn't necessarily the case. I've covered football for 7 years, and I don't even know 100% what an illegal formation is. I don't know how many people need to be in the line. I don't know when the tight end has to cover. I don't know how to explain that when the guy says illegal formation and someone says, what does that mean? I'm like, they weren't lined up properly.
That's right.
Rarely that does that happen in baseball, and I think that's why it's important for some of those changes to occur, because I think baseball has monopoly in that aspect of...
Sure.
You look at the biggest stars in sports from 1900 to...
Probably the 90s, like the 80s.
I would say the 80s.
Like Jordan.
Yeah. Before Jordan and Bird and Magic,
yeah, yeah,
you had Babe Ruth, you had Lou Gehrig, you had Ted Williams, Stan Musial, Willie Mays,
yeah.
Joe DiMaggio, and the list yeah. goes on and on. And now, Mike Trout. I was speaking to another baseball writer, a friend of mine, and
maybe
he was
Bryce
talking.
Harper.
Bryce Harper's the guy,
yeah.
And he was talking to a Major League Baseball player, Major League All-Star, and he was talking about face of the game. And the player said, "It's Bryce Harper." He said, "He's it. He's the only one right now where he has T-Mobile. He goes mm-hmm. on and does a commercial." I don't know if there's other baseball players I'm trying to think out of my head. There isn't. That has a national commercial, not local.
Yeah, I think it since Jeter, I don't really think there's been
right.
one. Jeter was maybe sort of that last standard bearer of the generation's past.
Yeah.
Where you could put his face out there and you'd know. Like, who is there anyone currently that has a signature shoe? Was Jeter the last person that had a shoe?
I don't think, yeah. And that's something I think ESPN did their top 100 athletes, and there wasn't a baseball player in it.
Really?
Which is, that's a problem for the game, because not Mike Trout, not Mookie Betts.
Oh, top 100 current athletes.
Yes, current. Yeah, okay. Current athletes in terms of...
This was under the premise of athleticism? Or
no,
just, like, okay.
Just top athletes worldwide, and Twitter followers counted.
Okay.
So it was okay. known. And so I think Ronaldo was number one. Just
sure.
Because he has...
Like
I think,
world renowned. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's an issue for baseball, because you need stars. Star power is huge. And
right.
they've done the Players Weekend with the names on the back. And
Not great.
Baseball is difficult because... And we should have asked Jared this. Maybe we can have him on again because there's just so much to talk about. But the bat flips and... You can't do that because, oh, baseball and...
It's a rigid set of, like, old-school rules that are... So, I think that's maybe where you were
some
talking
personality.
Earlier.
Personality. Yeah. Bring me some personality.
You were talking earlier about how ubiquitous some of the very general... Like, everyone knows three strikes. Everyone knows a walk. But there's definitely sort of this unspoken code...
Good point.
...where you have to be super... into it or have played it at a specific level to understand and almost appreciate why that happens.
It's a really good point.
And also too, I think baseball used to, this is sort of different than that, but baseball also used to be unique in the sense where they were the early adapters to analytics. I mean, you look mm-hmm. at people like Bill James
yeah.
and obviously Moneyball is the big thing with the Oakland Athletics. But it's interesting to see they're still hyper aware of analytics, but the notion of change is still so rigid, you know?
Weird.
And I think that's a big thing, because they really are sort of holding on to their classical, like, well, we're baseball and we do things a certain way. Like Jared said, they're stubborn. People don't like change in baseball. And maybe that's a part of the reason why. I mean, when Bryce Harper came out with the whole make baseball fun again thing, people were pissed.
Oh, yeah.
That did not go over well at all. And I think you can understand why if you understand the notion of like how baseball people are, but I don't think it bears well for the game transitioning to youth culture the same way that basketball does or something like that.
I think, yeah, I think Bryce Harper is good for the game when he's playing well. He isn't having a great year.
No, bad
but
year.
Regardless, because I view him as kind of like the Duke basketball or the New York Yankees.
Sort of,
you love
yeah.
him or you hate him.
Yep, he's like the evil empire.
But you have an emotion about him.
Yes.
Whereas there's
Which
a lot
untrue
of baseball.
For most baseball
right.
players, probably.
Is there anyone out there who hates Mike Trout?
Right.
And on that aspect, is there anyone outside of Los Angeles that's like, oh my God, he's my favorite player? Yep. He's really good.
Well, and think about the notion. So, like, Robinson Cano recently got suspended for PEDs. I assume, like, probably 75% of the people who are listening to this that are just, like, fans of the podcast that didn't come through Jared are like, who is Robinson Cano? He's, like, at one point was probably, like, a top five baseball player in the league.
He's and probably a Hall of Fame second, borderline Hall of Fame second baseman, Hall of Fame second
yeah,
baseman.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. Well, now maybe there's a shadow with
was
the PED
why I say
stuff,
borderline.
Sure, yeah. But I... You didn't. I doubt that was a top story on SportsCenter currently. I doubt it got posted.
Oh,
too
Robinson
far
Cano.
Out. Yeah.
Oh, that was a huge story.
Was it?
Yeah.
So that. So was that as big of a story? If that. So let's think of like the. Probably now at this time, like the 12th. He's like top 15 baseball players currently. Maybe if a top 15 basketball player like had a similar thing happen, would that have been a bigger story?
And I think that's maybe where Jared's talking about, and it's a great point of baseball beating itself up,
right?
Because when Julian Edelman is serving four games
right.
for his suspension, it was like a bottom line item. It was more how this will affect your fantasy team.
Exactly, it was a story, but it wasn't
baseball,
like a football's
it's
ruined
a huge
because of it. Yeah.
thing because for whatever reason, baseball in PEDs. It escalates it.
Yeah,
tenfold.
Because of the history with that's an interesting. I wonder how PEDs sort of the PED in the pop culture used to be a really big thing too, though. Like baseball, people adjacent to baseball used to sort of like use that as a way into it. Like you remember the Mark Echo, Barry Bonds, like 72nd home run ball where he mm-hmm. put the asterisk mm-hmm. on it and mm-hmm. then sent it to that's yeah PEDs in baseball are such a unique story
and I'll
like
say
subplot.
I disagreed a little bit with Jared when he said you know baseball people are beating up baseball, but I think he's right in the sense that when Charles Oakley and such talks about LeBron James and Kobe being
sure.
soft, we're like oh, okay haha
yeah you don't it's offhanded you're
right
like,
yeah,
okay.
yeah okay there's old guys talking
right.
about in baseball it is different because it's given much more
it's like
credence.
A level of yeah
it's like well hey you know Johnny Bench said it so I mean
exact yeah like I can't tell you like the amount of times that Pete Rose is interviewed during a single
right.
year by like a baseball writer or like a sports writer and just uses it to absolutely bash the game that like I mean, you have to see ask if there's a little bit of bias there from Pete Rose, but it's just he uses the platform to just bash on it, and it's like, well, I mean, sure, but it's still going. It's not like it's that different. Like you
right.
just can't like kill a catcher like you used to be able to, Pete Rose. Like,
which is a good thing.
Yeah, which is a good. This is where you get back into the argument of like, well, it's not original, like tough guy base, like the Ty Cobb, like spikes high
right.
thing. But I mean, it sort of depends on, I think, which sort of gets back into our conversation about, are you being true to baseball or are you being true to the fans? And I think maybe that's the biggest dilemma baseball faces is.
I think it's a dilemma. Every sport faces.
Right.
Baseball, it's highlighted because I feel like
the sport and the entertainment aspect are so far away. It's very much polarized in the fact that baseball people are like, absolutely not. And then people who are fans of like, want to see something entertaining are like, this is basically golf.
Yeah, I think that's something that, you know, tweet at us, let us know what you think because you have the entertainment aspect, which is making it enjoyable for fans, making it shorter games,
right.
more action. But the analytics are how one wins the game, you know,
exactly.
bringing in a lefty on lefty, taking the pitcher out after two
right.
times through the rotation. That's what these people are saying to win games. And only one team wins the World Series.
Yep.
So there's not a whole, if you're not one of those teams, you just put a lot of time in for not
right.
a whole lot. So
strategy versus aesthetic.
This lived up to my expectation. I was excited
yeah.
for this one. And again, thanks to Jared. We'll have
yep.
his Twitter bio, Twitter link in our description, and we'll also include some of the links to his stories.
Bit of a reading list. It'll be good. Well, for Mike Bonner, I am Montana Samuels, and we hope you'll have us back.